Could you talk a little bit about the technology for high voltage transmissions and what's being done on other projects of this nature? Now, you hear, you know, I'm a huge proponent of, you know, I have to just bury the sucker. Of course, I'm not paying for it, so it's easy to say that. And then you hear, well, they're going to snake one down through Lake Champlain, and then they're going to use some railroad tracks for others. And so isn't there a way to do this without 135-foot towers? Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yes. I would say the best way to describe the overhead power lines these days is that they're 19th-century technology in the 21st century. We have HVDC lines all over the world, under the oceans and buried. In Australia, the longest buried line in the world, carrying power from eastern Australia to western Australia, was built by none other than a subsidiary of Hydro-Québec. And they brag about it. In fact, on Hydro-Québec's own website, they tell us how wonderful it is to have buried power lines. Now, PSNH tells us that it's too expensive to bury the lines. But they're trying to tell us that we're going to compare apples and oranges. They're saying that burying the lines would cost 10 times as much as putting the overhead lines in, but that's not true. What they're really saying is that if they want to use their own right-of-way over mountains and through bogs and so forth and so on, yes, indeed, it would cost 10 times as much. But the way to do it is to have power corridors along public rights-of-way. The ground has already been prepared. There's no blasting to do or anything. And so the actual cost would be about even with the cost of putting up an overhead line. The good news is that we would not have to worry about destruction of people's property, the no aesthetic damage, and the state would get an income from it. It's really a no-brainer. So actually, long-term, over a 40-year lifetime, it would cost you less money to bury the lines than it would to keep them overhead. Because when they're buried, they're not damaged by lightning or ice storms or high winds. And one last thing, buried power lines do not emanate EMF, which is damaging to DNA. So this is a win-win if we could get them to do the right thing. Thank you.
So the question that you'll all be asking yourselves is, with it so obvious that you ought to bury these things as opposed to string them up through the middle of your town, why isn't that being thought about? Why is it that you're not reading in the paper that here's a brand new proposal to bury these lines? And that's the point I want to follow up on. And the point is that PSNH and Northeast Utilities have a huge conflict of interest. Why is that? You actually have to wade through 501 pages of an 800-page filing that Northern Pass made with the federal government for an approval for this project. And on page 501, there's a footnote that says, right-of-way rental payments will be made by Northern Pass. Light bulb goes on. So there's 40 miles of new right-of-way. There's 140 miles proposed of existing PSNH right-of-way. Why does PSNH want the lines to be located on PSNH right-of-way? Well, because they will be paid ultimately by Hydro-Québec large, very large sums of money as rental payments to use the line through Deerfield and the rest of the existing line, as opposed to putting it somewhere sensible. We asked them, and it's funny because we always ask if PSNH will debate us. They always refuse to do so. So we tend to ask them obliquely in terms of comments in the press and things, would you tell us how much you're being paid? How much will you be paid to put the lines on the existing right-of-way and ruin these towns rather than bury them, as Pete says, on highways or rail beds? They won't tell us, and so we tried to figure it out ourselves. We looked at the valuations that they're paying up north right now to buy that new 40 miles of right-of-way. Based on the amounts they're paying to buy land up north, they would be entitled to $350 million as a lump sum payment for the 150 miles, 140 miles of right-of-way, based on a typical economic model, which is if you were lucky enough to have shale gas in your backyard, you typically get 12.5% to 20% of what the value of the gas is that's taken off your property. Use the same thing as a landowner. That would be $100 million a year that PS&H would get from Northern Pass. So the thing to burn into your mind is, in New Hampshire, we're not having the right discussion. We're still stuck on the page that PS&H can tell you we're going to put the line through Deerfield. You guys have got to live with it, see it, have it affect your property values, because they're unwilling to discuss the idea of using a corridor like the highways, the railroad beds, or other places it can be buried.
And I would just quickly add to everything that Jim and Peter just said by saying that, I mean, this really is a matter of the PS&H tail wagging the dog. PS&H is in a somewhat desperate situation. People are referring to it as a death spiral. They have aging, inefficient power plants, the Merrimack Station, Schiller, these aging, inefficient, dirty coal-burning plants, which are driving up their cost of generation and driving away their own ratepayers. Commercial ratepayers have been migrating away from PS&H, leaving PS&H with fewer and fewer ratepayers among whom to spread their high costs. So that's one. That's why power from PS&H is so expensive. So they're desperate to solve this problem, to address their economic woes, and this is certainly one way of doing it, is generating revenues off these lines. And it's, you know, we're convinced that's why they are fixated on this line only. And anytime anyone engages them in the question, and it's in the most recent Business New Hampshire article, why not bury the lines? Their stock answer is, we can't bury the lines on our route. It would be too expensive. The environmental impacts would be too high. They are unwilling to consider alternative routes. Fortunately, the law will require them to consider alternative routes, but to date, they've outright refused to do so.
A little bit of good news in that front, though, and that is House Bill 648, which passed the legislature, and it was mainly dealing with eminent domain issues, and I don't know if we'll talk about that earlier, but there was a provision that was added onto that bill, and then there's a companion bill in the Senate that's working its way through the process that establishes what's referred to as a interagency task force, in which the Department of Transportation, Environmental Services, DRED, and the PUC over the course of this summer are supposed to start some preliminary work at looking at whether or not it might make sense to use the state's right-of-ways to bury transmission lines under. So that was kind of a quiet win in the legislative process, but it has, at least on 648, has been enacted. Part of our challenge, you know, those of us at the panel and hopefully those of you in the room, is kind of holding the state agency's feet to the fire and hope that over the course of the summer and the fall, they actually begin that that mapping process. So when this, as Tom made reference to, the Department of Energy opens up the proceeding to look at alternatives, there may be a state transmission corridor that emerges as an alternative to the, what may be proposed as the Northern Pass route.